It's the E-commerce Master Plan Podcast, here to help you grow your e-commerce business faster and more efficiently by cutting through the hype to bring you inspiration and guidance from the e-commerce sector and beyond. Here's your host, Chloe Thomas.
Hello, Master Plan World. Welcome to our latest podcast. It's awesome to have you all out there listening. I'm Chloe Thomas, the creator of the E-commerce Master Plan. I'm an author, speaker, and advisor, and I focus on e-commerce marketing. A few weeks ago, back in episode 150, we got deep into the world of content marketing with specialist Jacqueline Parisi from HelloFresh USA. Today, we're going to do another expert deep dive, this time into the physical side of your offering. We're talking POS, which is point of sale, so that's the physical retail world, and also packaging. So I'm going to introduce you to our special guest today. Greg Corry earned his retail stripes with 10 years at Home Depot, and for the last 15 years has been running marketing agency Porchlight. Porchlight's a full service agency, so Greg gets involved with the whole marketing mix. But today we're going to try and focus on point of sale, how you get your customers to take your product off the physical shelf in your physical stores and others' physical stores, plus the power of product packaging, a subject that, in my opinion, does not get anywhere near enough airtime. Hello, Greg.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Great to have you on. Now, I've given our listeners like a super simple overview of what you're up to and your specialities, but before we get deep into those, how did you first get started in e-commerce and retail?
Yeah, so The quick version, I guess, of the story is that right out of college, I started working for the Home Depot in their marketing and advertising department. And that was actually in Tampa, Florida. And then after about 4 or 5 years there, Home Depot moved me to Atlanta, Georgia, where I continued to work in their marketing and advertising department and just got exposed to a lot of different areas or sides of the marketing and advertising business. After about 10 years, I thought it was about time to move and jump ship. And so I actually went to work for Newell Rubbermaid. Newell Rubbermaid was actually a vendor of Home Depot. So I actually got the benefit of seeing, you know, while I was at Home Depot, the merchandising or the retailer side of things. And then when I went to Newell, I got to the fortunate advantage of seeing the manufacturer side of things. But then after Newell, that kind of ran its course. They actually wanted to move our office to a different city and state, and I decided I wanted to stay here in Atlanta. And so I just started freelancing, just doing side business, side jobs as they came. And, you know, that got really busy. And so instead of having enough work to keep myself busy, I was actually having to call some friends and try to in the design community and say, hey, I need some help with these projects. And kind of organically, 15 years later, Porchlight's still here, and we serve that community. We serve the packaging and retail community. We really focus on home improvement, but we also dabble in some other areas as well.
Oh, cool. And so you kind of, in some ways, went hunter turned gamekeeper turned another form of gamekeeper, because you went from the retailer who's buying in the product to the person who's creating the product and then to the marketing agency supporting all of them.
That's true. I do get to see, I have seen all kind of three sides. And so I actually think that gives me a really interesting perspective because I can see challenges that each face. You know, I understand what the agency has to go through to learn about the product and become kind of the brand stewards and understand that they get the branding correct and that we understand what they're trying to accomplish. But then on the other side is I understand what the retailer is looking for, right? They have a whole another list of concerns. I mean, you know, does everybody any wonder why, you know, when you look at a shelf in any retail environment, there's no spaces between the products, you know, all the different sizes of packaging and all the different sizes of products that sit on the shelf. And, you know, that shelf space is measured down to the inch or even less. So that space is extremely critical. So we love to hear what the retailer has to say and the way that they understand their business. And then the other side is the manufacturer, the brand owner. I mean, nobody knows their product like they do. And so it's really interesting. And I love being on this side because I get to hear both of those stories from each of their perspectives. And when it all comes together, you know, it's amazing.
I guess when you're saying about everything being measured to the nearest millimeter just makes me think of, you know, you occasionally come across those business owners, you know, fresh business owners with a great idea for a product who have this crazy idea for like a hexagonal shaped box or, you know, something and you think, yes, that would stand out, but no one is going to find space for that because that's, you know, in my world, normally that's going to be a nightmare to get delivered. But also it's that physical space on the shelf, isn't it? It's like you take up twice as much space as your nearest competitor. Why?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, and that's, again, where in a sense, we're trying to help these people because they may think they have the best idea and maybe it is a really good idea, but the challenge is, you know, anybody can have a great idea, but if you can't sell that in, then it's not necessarily going to go anywhere. And that's part of where we try to help brand owners or manufacturers is to make sure that I guess one of the biggest things that we try to help them with is to understand that there's multiple sales calls that have to go on, right? You have to sell it to the retailer first. And then after you sell it to the retailer, then we have to sell it to the consumer. I know a lot of people always talk about the consumer, the end user, you know, do what's right for the consumer. And of course, that's your goal and strategy. But there's a pretty big hurdle before you even can think about the consumer in a sense, is that make sure that the retailer has a need for it to put it on the shelf.
So I would have assumed that when it comes to kind of the physical product that's going to sit on that shelf, the retailer and the customer's goals are pretty much the same, or have you got to tick different boxes for each?
You know, I think you have to tick different boxes for each. I think a lot of times those boxes are going to line up, and that the retailer does need or has a certain need to fill for a certain consumer. But the other side too is that maybe the retailer is not necessarily looking for the best product ever invented, right? Maybe the retailer has a need that says, hey, we're looking for an entry-level priced item. We need something that gets them in the $5 range or $10 range or just the opposite. Maybe we're looking for something that is the best of the best and that it is premium. And so I think from the brand owner's perspective, they have to understand if they're pitching or trying to sell their product into a retailer, that retailer has needs as well. Almost the exact same process is what we would do with a consumer. So where does this fit in the needs of the consumer? Is a consumer buying this just because they have to have it or they have a specific need? Or is it a desire, emotional need, or something along that line versus utilitarian or commodity type of need? And so I think both of those have this. So I hope I didn't confuse you, but I do think that the boxes can line up, but I also think that they can definitely be different.
Yeah, I get what you mean. It's like you know, what you're going to put there, which makes the end consumer want to buy it, is essential for both. Because quite frankly, the retailer might place the first order, but if the end consumer doesn't buy it, then they're not going to place a second. And that's, you know, when the money starts really rolling in. But
the
retailer has a whole range. They want to fit you in somewhere. They've got a hole, literally in some cases, they've got a hole on the shelf that they need to fill, and they know what the price point should be. They know what the packaging should be. So I guess, let me put a kind of a case study-esque question to you. If you were advising, and let's go for coffee, because everyone seems to be creating their own brand of coffee at the moment. So apologies if you're going, oh God, she said coffee.
No, sorry. It's either coffee or alcohol, so that's okay.
So we'll go with the coffee because it, you know, for you it's early in the morning, so we'll go coffee. So if someone's come to you to help them get the product, the look and feel of the product, I suppose, that physical presence of the product right, to get it into, say, Walmart, you know, a big supermarket place, how much of the time do you spend advising them before they start talking to the retailer? Or how much time would Walmart spend going, if you could tweak this, this, and this?
So without being too political in a sense, you know, without trying to go right down the middle, but basically it really depends. It really does. It's a 50-50 split. And there's two ways that we've seen it happen. So in one hand, if you're a national brand, right? So if you're a national brand coming to an agency or coming to a retailer saying, we want to get this product on the shelf, they may not have to do a lot of concessions. They may not have to make a lot of changes, right? They've got the clout, they've got the presence and things of that.
So and the track record, quite fundamentally.
Right, they've got a track record, yeah. Right? So if you're a small, independent coffee brand and you're trying to break way and you're talking to Walmart to get on the shelf, there's two approaches. And we talk about these approaches. There's one approach where we button up everything that they have. We button up their branding. We button up their packaging. We do mock-ups. We tell them how many are going to fit in a case. And we say we're going to have two facing. So that's two products, the same side by side on the shelf. And this is how we're going to merchandise it. And we go to them with this entire kind of finished package, right? Or finished everything. This is what we're going to do. This is how much it's going to cost. Do you want to buy it? Right? And that's a strategy. Mm-hmm. The other strategy could be where we go in with a lot of what ifs, right? So we say, Walmart, we have a product. It's a really good quality product. We can package it like this, or we can package it like this. Here are some creative executions we've explored. And so that strategy says, hey, Walmart, we're wanting you to partner with us. We really want you to put our product on the shelf. And so we're hoping that you could have some ownership on how the creative looks or how the merchandising is put together. And do you want a 5-pound bag or do you want a 1-pound bag? And so it is different. So it just depends on what the strategy that the brand owner wants to approach. But both have pros and cons.
I suppose it's in my coffee example, which I'm assuming is quite a crowded marketplace, to be going in with the fait accompli, the here it is, it's done, that first option is more likely to work. Whereas if you're going in with something, okay, everyone's now obsessed with, I don't know, spiralizing or courgettes or, you know, some new crazy type of vegetable that we're eating to replace pasta, then that is where you go in with the conversation because you need a bit more information on the customer. Or am I oversimplifying things?
No, I think you're absolutely right. Absolutely.
Oh, I like it when I'm right. So we've got that product packaging that we've got ready for the retailer. We've kind of explored that bit. How about for the end consumer? How can someone get that packaging right so that the consumer picks their product, not the one that sat next to it on that shelf? Because it's a really competitive place, the physical store shelf.
Yeah, that's the challenge, right? That's the million-dollar question is how do we get. So if we pass the hurdle of the retailer and we actually get our product on the shelf, which is no small feat, how do we then make sure that consumers want to gravitate? And so, you know, there's lots of things that we can do, but there's a couple of things that we do like to do to really try to figure that out. And one is kind of a simple question, but it's talk to consumers, right? And so however you do that, whether you want to spend large money and hire a research agency and do a cross-country, analysis on what they like and what they don't like and measure it and all that kind of stuff. Or it's simply just, you know, standing in the aisle of a, like you said earlier, a Walmart and seeing what people are gravitating towards and looking at the competition and seeing and understanding the void of what might be missing and how your product can fill that space. And so those are some of the basic things. But I think, you know, it's really understanding who's buying it and why they're buying it is you know, sometimes goes underestimated, right? It's almost like, well, if I just put it on the shelf, it'll sell. And we've seen that strategy fail a lot.
So I guess from that customer research, you're then going to understand what wording the customer's using to talk about the product, and that's the wording you want on the front. So you go straight in for those benefits and the right phrasing.
Yeah, I mean, as a creative or a trained creative, it's sometimes taboo to say that I love seeing and hearing research and what consumers say. But if we do have some research and we have some thoughts on exactly what consumers are looking at and what they're thinking, for me as a creative, it's easier because I don't have to think or guess. I mean, it's right there in front of me. I can totally understand that, you know, if we take your coffee example, that do I know what farm these beans came from? Do I know what country? Is that important? You know, we may think it looks great to put a picture of a farmer with dirty hands on the cover of a coffee bag and say that this is, you know, this coffee has come from somewhere else, but do coffee drinkers really care where that comes from? And that's an interesting question to ask and have answered.
I was like, if you're target customer for that coffee is the person who's trying to wean themselves off Red Bull, then your packaging is going to be very different than the target customer who likes going to the theatre and wants to have the best possible artisan coffee. Price points might not be that different, but the way in which you attract them to your package of coffee is going to be very different, isn't it?
Absolutely, yes. Again, you're right. You've done this before.
No, trust me. Whilst I was preparing for this interview, I was thinking about how when I, you know, times I've actually been involved in product packaging and point of sale, and my primary memory is sitting next to someone at Past Times, which was a UK high street retailer. I looked after the online and the catalogue side, and she looked after the retail side, and the endless hours she spent signing off shelf tickets. And I was like, yeah, that's not a good topic for today. We'll try and avoid the shelf tickets. But no, it's fascinating stuff. Well, not so much the shelf tickets, though. I got myself well off track there. Sorry, listeners.
I'm sorry. I took you down that road. Sorry.
I will try and get us back on track. So then once the customer's bought the product, they've seen, you know, the packaging got it and the whole proposition got it into the retail store. The packaging has then attracted the customer to put it in their basket. And of course, what is that packaging's job then to make sure they buy that product again? And this is where it starts coming into the online sphere as well, because I know a lot of our listeners, they are selling on Amazon or eBay where there's restrictions about what marketing you can do to the customer. But of course, they'd love that person to come back and buy direct. And that's where product packaging can have a role as well. So how do you build that into the product packaging? Is it even a consideration on day one, or is it get that first sale and hope they just love the product?
No, it's definitely a consideration. I think what we see here is a lot of times it's a consideration, but sometimes depending on the brand owner and what their level of expectation and how far they want to think it through, that sometimes it may get put on the back burner. It may not be top of mind, but as creatives, we are thinking about that, right? So is this a package that is going to so if this is a primary packaging, so we take your coffee example. So mm-hmm. What happens when I do take that coffee bag home? And again, this goes a little bit more into research. And so what does the consumer do with their coffee? Do they open this bag and dump the coffee into some other container that then sits on their counter? And then they throw away the primary packaging? Or are we building the bag or the packaging or the primary packaging to be used as some type of dispensing unit, right? So that they don't throw it away. You know, those are some things that we can think about. And maybe coffee is a different example. But there's other examples as well where the packaging itself actually lives in the home. And so I think for those categories, you really need to think about how it looks and feels and then go, you know, how it interacts with the person inside their home because they've actually brought it into their home.
To make sure they're getting that brand being reiterated to them again and again and again, I suppose.
Right, exactly.
And do you do much in the way of kind of calls to action on the product packaging, like follow us on Facebook or Twitter, or here's our website URL, enter our survey to win a prize, and that kind of like proactive data capture side of things?
You know, I think... not today. We're not putting that type of promotional messaging on packaging. I mean, we are mentioning, you know, mm-hmm. Hey, Facebook, find us for more information on Facebook, or, you know, find us here for more information, or here's our website address and things of that nature, almost as a sense of replacing the 1-800 customer service.
Yeah.
Call. So we transition from, hey, if you need more information, would like more information, see us here. More in the home improvement space, we're doing a little bit more of that, say in the instructions or in the instruction booklet. If you have to, you know, say assemble a shelving unit, or you're unpacking, say a cordless tool or a drill or something that would have instructions, but not so much on the basic packaging as far as shouting that message. One thing that we are seeing though is, you know, an emerging trend. It's going slow, but it's coming. Is the you know, I'm sure you've seen the QR codes and everything mm-hmm. kind of come and go, but now what you're seeing is the the photographs you can actually take once the package is designed, that entire package then becomes almost a QR code for a means of getting to a website or a video or for more information. So in a sense, you'd be able to literally take a picture with your phone of the package, and then that would then bounce you to wherever the brand owner would want you to go, whether it's a, like I said, a video, an instruction sheet that says, hey, this is how to assemble it, or anything really that they wanted to do. And that's kind of fun. That's something that's going to be interesting to see evolve over the next years.
Well, yeah, that's quite cool, because then it could be like, oh, you've bought this coffee, you can do more with it than just coffee. Here's some recipes. And at this point, the coffee example starts not to really work. But, you know, you could have, here's a video of how to put together this flat pack furniture, or here's some ways to use this product you've just bought.
Absolutely. Even if it's the farmer, here's a story of the farm and the farmer that oh, yeah, you know, grew these coffee beans. Absolutely. It depends on the emotional connection or the instructions or informations that the brand owner wants to give to the end consumer.
And that's literally just photographing the packaging, and through you mm-hmm. go.
Absolutely. Okay. And then that even has, so we've talked a little bit at the beginning about how these things kind of help the retailer. So in a sense, if you go back to, actually, I think in the UK, you have, is it Wegmans?
Who?
Is Wegmans in the UK?
No, I don't think so. In terms of supermarkets?
Yeah.
We got Tesco and Sainsbury's and Asda.
Tesco. So maybe, I'm not sure about this. So maybe, take the barcode, right? So mm-hmm. imagine the barcode on the package, right? So whenever you go to the retail store, you have to make sure that the barcode lines up with the scanner and that it scans through the register to get your price and to get out smoothly. It works great when it works, but then all of a sudden, if that barcode for some reason, you know, has a hiccup, that kind of slows the process down. Or if it's a very large item and the barcode's on the bottom and you have to pick it up and lug it and turn it around. Well, today, that same technology, you can scan the entire package anywhere on the package. It does not have to be a black and white barcode to be able to get that information into the register or the point of sale system at the retailer, which speeds things up. So that's another area and a different point of view. So one way that code can help the retailer speed checkout and efficiencies, as well as help provide more information to the consumer once they get home.
Very cool. And you've by going into that trend, you've preempted my last question on all this, which is, are there any key industry trends we should be aware of in terms of what's going on in the world of packaging at the moment?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a big one, right? That's a big one mm-hmm. right there. So smart packaging is coming, and it's going to be interesting to see kind of where that takes off and then how we adapt that to consumers. There's a lot of other avenues that's taken as well. Anti-theft.
Sorry, Greg. That smart packaging is this scannable package, basically.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yes, cool. It is. That's cool. A part of it. Yes. So there's other things you can do too with you know, tracking the package. You can actually track it and find out, you know, exactly. You can, you know, chain of custody if somebody wants to know exactly where that package started from and where it was shipped to and what retailer and things of that nature. So you can actually track the package through its life cycle all the way down to after it's been, you know, disposed of. In the olive oil market and things of like wines to be counterfeiting and things of, in a sense of authenticity, there's ways to ensure that with smart packaging as well, with embedded codes and things inside RFID chips and things inside the labels. It's all a very, very interesting kind of new avenue or trend or even just transformation that packaging is going to come to. So basically, it's making the packaging work even harder and what it does today by just protecting or being a billboard for a consumer.
Cool. And I guess something we're seeing in the UK as a trend seems to be people wanting a greener style of packaging, you know, a bit more eco-friendly, be that in terms of less packaging or in terms of recyclable or biodegradable packaging. Is that something you're seeing happening more and more?
Yeah, absolutely. With the onslaught of Amazon and the right size packaging, and the ability to have a packaging that is easier to ship and has a lot less material. I mean, if you think about today, let's change your coffee example to to some crazy thing like toy packaging, right? Toy yeah. packaging is really meant today to advertise the toy, to show the toy to the consumer and all of the pieces all spread out so that they can see the, you know, the 15 pieces that comes with the toy mm-hmm. and everything is in a clamshell, which is wrapped in a box and then put together with all the zip ties and the wires. Very difficult to open toy packaging. Well, imagine that package if it didn't have to be displayed on the retail shelf, right? You could substantially reduce your packaging size, therefore making that package, you know, much, much smaller. And then that would makes it much easier to ship.
And of course, it wouldn't need to be see-through, so you could do the whole thing out of card without the plastic element. That makes a huge difference, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's a massive difference, absolutely.
So with toy retailers now creating two packages, one for physical store, one for online.
I mean, that's what we're seeing right now. And wow. so much so that we're not necessarily an Amazon expert, but I do believe Amazon, if the package has to be, Amazon has certain specs for shipping e-commerce and mm-hmm. shipping things online. And so if you're a seller or reseller at Amazon and your package doesn't necessarily meet their specs, they will repack your item and charge you for it. So it's something definitely you should be looking at, absolutely, that how do you right-size packaging?
And that's like losing out on every front, isn't it? You paid for the packaging in the first place. Now Amazon's thrown it in the bin and they've repacked it and all your branding's gone.
It's that's like right.
losing yes, on so every
I believe,
front.
You know, if it's a liquid or anything like that, Amazon, if it doesn't come in kind of a plastic kind of Ziploc type bag, they will add that to it. So yeah, it's definitely, you're right. It does lose out. You have to pay for it twice.
Wow. Okay. I think it's time we go into the top tips round now. And I love this section because it gives me and our listeners some really quick ideas for taking our businesses to the next level. So Greg, first up is the book top tip. Oh, and I should say you can now go outside the world of packaging into your huge knowledge of e-commerce and retail for the rest of this. The book top tip. If everyone listening to this podcast agreed to take Friday off and read a book to make their business better, which book would you recommend?
Oh, wow. But focus on the business. I would say, you know, I read a good book. And let me confess, I almost feel like I'm lying to you. I don't read a lot anymore. I listen to podcasts and I listen to mm-hmm. audiobooks. So I'm not sure if listening to a book counts as reading a book. It definitely counts. Okay. Essentialism. I'm not sure if you've heard that one.
Would that be the lovely Mr. Greg McKeown?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. Love that book.
It's a really you know, he has some great advice in that book, but it's not easy to do. there's one mention in it, and I'll just plug this in. If you've heard this, if you've read it, maybe you'll remember it. And I don't know exactly who said it, so forgive me. But in that book, they said something to the effect, if it's not a hell yes, it's a no.
Yeah.
And I feel like in the essentialism world, trying to really streamline clutter and make decisions, I tell myself that a lot lately. And even it's hard to make that decision, but I don't know. That just stuck with me.
I think you've just convinced me I need to have another read of it. okay. The traffic top tip next then. Which marketing method do you either prize above all others or think doesn't get the press it deserves?
So let's see. Facebook just changed some of their algorithms, so I'm not sure if this still applies. But we loved seeing, when it comes to kind of e-commerce and background, we loved Facebook's lookalike audiences. So that was it's interesting to have. So I'm not sure if your listeners are going to maybe follow me, so I'll explain quickly. But in Facebook, you can do some things where you import you know, names, titles, addresses, email addresses of your targets, right, that you have. And then even job titles or companies. And then Facebook will then create a new list based on their algorithms on the list that you imported. So you'll end up with two different lists of targets. And we love targeting to each of those and then seeing which one performs better. So Facebook's lookalike audience is an interesting tool.
Oh yeah. And it's very much still there as well.
Yeah.
Love a bit of lookalikes. Okay, the tool top tip. This might be a collaboration tool, a social media plugin, a phone app, or just a way of working. Is there a cool little tool you use that makes you and your team more efficient from day to day?
Oh, we have so many tools. Kind of too many. I mean, on the social media side, we probably use, we use a couple of different tools. So we use the social media aggregators. So we use Sprout Social, Hootsuite. I mean, those are phenomenal because that allows you to have one program that can feed all your social media channels into. So you're not constantly logging into Facebook, logging into Twitter, going back and forth. So, I mean, that's a huge tool. If you're doing a larger volume, if it's just one brand, then maybe it's not necessarily, but if you're having to manage several, that's a good one. For our day-to-day business here, we use a program called Harvest, which helps keep track of all of our clients and all of our estimates and all of our time and material expenses, which is a nice online tool. We can use it anywhere with our phones, on the desktop, laptops, all the way around.
Oh, some great recommendations there. Thank you.
Yeah, sure.
And the last top tip is the growth top tip. If you met someone today who's focused on growing their e-commerce business from 100 orders per month to 1,000, what would be your number one tip for them?
Number one tip. I think when it comes to e-commerce, you have to dive into the statistics. You have to figure out. So in your analogy, you said 100. So if they're getting 100, my first question would be, where are those 100 coming from today? Understanding where your market's coming from. In other words, did you get that 100 from a newspaper article or an online article, a PR article that was published? Did you get that because one person published a great review and people are reading the review and then they're going right to your site to purchase your item? So it's diving into to the back end, the statistics, knowing where the traffic's coming from. Was it organic search or was it paid search? Was it a free piece of media or paid media? And then once you understand where that comes from, then capitalize on that. Try to figure out exactly how you can expand on that and to grow that from 100 to the 1,000.
Oh, great advice. And I have to say, personally, I like nothing more than diving into someone's analytics to try and answer that very question.
Yeah.
I would happily lose days of my life to doing that. Okay, master plan.
We'll call you soon. Analyzing our statistics.
Awesome. The more Google Analytics accounts, the better, in my mind.
Yeah, there you go.
Master Plan World, you can find those top tips and links to everything else we've been chatting about in today's episode by heading over to ecommercemasterplan.com/podcast, where you'll see a link to this show. Now, Greg, before we say goodbye, could you let the listeners know a bit more about Porchlight and where they can find you and your business on the web and social media, please?
Absolutely. They can go to porchlightatl.com, and all of our social media, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram are at porchlightatl.
Oh, nice and easy. Okay, I'll add links to all of those and everything else we talked about today in the show notes. Again, Masterplan World, you can find those at ecommercemasterplan.com/podcast, or just go to the website, click on the podcast tab, or use the search box. Greg, thanks so much for being on the podcast today. It's been brilliant diving into the fascinating world of product packaging with you. I know the audience will have found it useful. So thank you so much. It's been an absolute pleasure.
You're welcome. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that dive into a different area of the e-commerce puzzle. I thought it was great. We dived into what your product packaging needs to do to appeal to the retailer, where it's physically going to sit, then what it needs to do to jump off the shelf into the customer's hands. And then, of course, the one which I think is relevant to every single one of you out there who is producing their own products, how that packaging impacts on the person when they receive it and when they get it into their home in order to help you get the repeat purchase. Plus a couple of really interesting trends there as well. So I hope that was a bit of a difference from the norm, but one I hope you've enjoyed. What did you think though? Do let me know in the Facebook group, the E-commerce Masterplan World Facebook group, that you can find via ecommercemasterplan.com/Facebook. If you want to join the group, make sure you answer the questions or I probably won't let you in. The only other thing I have to say to you all is have a great week and keep optimizing.
Thank you for listening to the E-commerce Master Plan podcast. Find out more at ecommercemasterplan.com.